everybody. Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. I am Kevin, I think, and I think I'm here with R. Jacob Honeybrook slash Roy. What's up, dude?
Yo, that's a good way to put it. I'm not really sure where I'm at now either.
Yeah.
I'm in the
Welcome
fifth
back.
dimension.
Yeah. Maybe a time travel loophole of sorts. Yeah, I think this is the Midnight Terrors podcast. I'm saying I think a lot because our movie tonight has made me question everything. But Roy, how are you doing, brother?
Good man, can't complain too much. Just living the author dream over here. How have you been?
I am good. I'm tired, as I was mentioning off air, because I stayed up late last night watching the latest episodes of Cobra Kai.
Gotta love that show. I fell off after about the third one, but man, those first two seasons, good shit.
I mean, yeah, I'm a diehard Cobra Kai fan. I love that show. One of my favorites. This new season is Chef's Kiss. So,
Well, I think Johnny's where the expression "hot babes and cold beers" come from, and that's just how I live my life. So I can relate to that guy.
Oh, Johnny's hilarious. I love it. So yeah, we're back, and we're continuing on with the lovely email that we received from my good friend Sky. Who has suggested the last two movies for us. This is the last movie in this email. There is a show in here that we will get to after we've watched it, but this is the last movie in the email. And yeah, so our movie pick tonight is Donnie Darko. And Sky said in the email for this one, in one of your podcast episodes, you wanted to dive more into the ambiguity aspects when it comes to horror, or in this case, thriller, and this is one of the most ambiguous movies of all time.
Well put.
So that's what we're doing tonight. We're going to talk about Donnie Darko. Yeah, Roy.
Hey, you said you wanted ambiguity. Well, you fucking got it.
Boy, did I. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and preface this episode by saying that, Roy, I'm going to be leaning on you a lot for this one.
Put your head on my shoulder, baby.
Yeah, there we go. Because I went in completely blind on this movie. I had never seen it before. I obviously knew about it. I knew Jake Gyllenhaal was in it, and I knew about Frank the Rabbit. That is the extent of what I knew of this movie. I knew it was a cult following as well, and but that's all I knew. So not your first watch this go around?
No, I had seen it in the early 2000s. My brother showed it to me, and back then I just had no idea. Kind of like you. First watch, I was just like, I don't get it. It's weird. I don't like it. And then we watched it again, and I think I put it to you the best way I could. I like the first hour, the second hour drags, and then I like the last 20 minutes of it.
Okay, well,
But it is one of those ones you always heard about throughout the years. Yeah, it has a major, major following.
Yeah, probably one of Jake Gyllenhaal's most iconic roles, despite being, you know, sort of a cult following movie. I feel like this one gets referenced a lot with him. And it's kind of unlike any other movie I've ever seen. But you know, I'm a big Jake Gyllenhaal fan. I think the guy is a phenomenal actor. He's really good in this. He's really good in, do you ever see the movie Nightcrawler from like 10 years ago?
Oh my God, that is a great movie.
Right? It's so good, about him being the crime scene photographer.
I used to have to work with guys like that in journalism.
Yeah, he's great in October Sky. Yeah, the dude's an amazing actor. He's really good in that movie Life, which was kind of like a modern day Alien a little bit.
Prisoners. He's like this hard-boiled detective in that one. And I believe he is in End of Watch. It was one of those famous actors in the early 2010s.
Sounds about right.
End of Watch is a crazy movie if that is him.
I wouldn't be surprised, but yeah, no, he's a phenomenal actor. So anything that he's in, I'm excited to watch. So I did watch Donnie Darko. And yeah, I'm gonna be throwing this to you a lot to get us through this one because I called you before we jumped on the line here because I was almost at the end of the movie and I had no words, no thoughts.
You were chickening out.
No, dude, I truthfully like this is the first movie where I didn't dislike it, but I also didn't like it at the same time. And I was about 30 minutes out from the end of the movie, and I was like, I don't know what to say. Like, I have no words for this movie. It's left me speechless.
That seems to be the opinion of a lot of people I've spoken with about it is we don't necessarily not like it, but we don't rave about it like some people who have seen it. And I'm not sure why that is, because it has everything that I think a lot of people would enjoy. It does have the questions about it, and it's very much left open to interpretation, and you can really dig into this one. So I'm not really sure. I'd say it's because it's pretentious. It very much insists upon itself. And seeing the director's cut, I think if it was a little bit shorter, it wouldn't be quite as, I don't know, it just felt very long for me.
Yes. So unfortunately, that was the only version I had access to, but it sounds like this one almost is an improvement over the theatrical cut based on the comparisons between the two cuts that you told me about, where this one that was available on Tubi and Peacock explained a little bit more.
From the research I did, that's what I came to. The theatrical cut doesn't really go into the time travel book as much, if at all. And also, from what I hear, the theatrical cut also left it more up to interpretation as to whether this was all in Donnie Darko's head, if he was schizophrenic. In the director's cut, it's made clear that he's on placebo pills and that there isn't anything wrong with him, and this very much is time travel in alternate universes and different dimensions.
Yeah, I definitely did not get any this is all in his head vibes from this one, which would have made sense because when this was being made and when this was coming out, that was a huge trope in horror and thrillers was the psychological twist where like you look at something like Secret Window where the the villain of the movie is revealed to be the other side of Johnny Depp's mind. Trying
Fight
to think,
Club.
Fight Club. Yeah, that was a big trope back then.
Well, on top of that, too, a lot of those late 90s, early 2000s movies focused on that idea of questioning reality. And not just your personal reality, but you look at something like The Matrix, huge in 99. The whole premise of that is what actually is consciousness or reality or the world we live in. And that was really a big theme back then. I thought this one was right up there along with those other movies and the topics that it explores.
Yeah, we were asking a lot of deeper questions back in this era. and yeah, I guess we're gonna dive into what questions were being asked in this one.
I think
So
part of that too was we got to a point in society where we had it made with everything. Like the late 90s was easy mode compared to everything that's come after it. And I think whenever you get to that point as a civilization, you start to wonder why are we here? What is this thing we're doing every day? I have a decent house, I have a decent job, but what there's got to be more to this thing,
I guess, man.
right?
This was 2001 when this came out. I was 9. I was not asking myself those questions.
No, I definitely wasn't either. I was in middle school or junior high. Whatever part of the country you come from,
I
it's different.
still had a Charmander pinata at that time, so
Fuck, that's badass.
I wish I still had that now, actually.
Now, is that the thing Charizard turns into, or does Charmander turn into Charizard?
Charmander turns into Charizard after turning into Charmeleon.
Oh, fuck, there's a Charmeleon? Holy shit. Let's go.
Yeah, so I have a birthday coming up. I could still go for a Charmander pinata.
Maybe I'll send you one.
Thank you.
Pinatas are us. I'll call them up.
Okay, so Donnie Darko, we have been trying recently to give sort of a synopsis of what the movies are about before we dive into them. I wish I didn't have this task, but I will do my best.
Good luck.
So Donnie Darko is a psychological thriller movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal as the title character, Donnie Darko. He is sort of this social outcast, high schooler. Is that right? Are they in high school?
Yeah, they're in high school.
Okay, cool. Because at one point there's a class that they're in that looks like a college like lecture hall. But so they're in high school, and he's sort of this social outcast with a troubled past. And he in his therapy sessions and his journey to kind of figure things out about himself is being visited by a mysterious entity known as Frank the Rabbit, which is showing him strange visions and warning him that the world is going to end on Halloween.
Do you think this is a horror movie, or would you consider it not a horror movie? What would you consider this?
Okay, so I think the only time we've touched on horror versus thriller was when we did the Silence of the Lambs episode.
Oh, yeah.
Silence of the Lambs, to me, makes a lot more sense to lump into horror than Donnie Darko does.
Yeah.
Because nothing particularly scares me about Donnie Darko. It's a fucked up movie for sure, but it's not like a scary movie. If I don't know how, I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's kind of how I feel about it. I'm almost more leaning towards thriller with this one, but once again, this is another one that really gets lumped in with horror, on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, I think it has its place in horror. To me, I looked at this almost like it embodies a lot of the themes and ideas that the Twilight Zone would go for. And I always thought the Twilight Zone was more of a horror TV series, but when I see stuff about it today, it seems to be more the consensus, is that it is more of a sci-fi show. So it's weird because you can really take a lot of ideas from sci-fi and put it into horror and vice versa. I mean, look at Frankenstein back in the 1800s. That was could have been very easily science fiction because the whole premise is trying to reanimate the dead, which is a very sciencey and fictiony thing to do.
Yeah. No, there's definitely sci-fi elements in Donnie Darko. Full disclosure, we probably will not walk through every single plot beat here because this movie jumps all over the place. But we will try to walk through at least on the surface what happens, like the key themes and whatnot.
Yeah, I think if you tried to go plot by plot in this, it would be difficult. Just because, I mean, when you talk about this movie, a lot of it isn't, oh, this beat happened here or this twist happened there. It's more so the overarching picture of this one, which is part of what makes it that cult classic is the discussions around it, I think.
For
And
sure.
the larger picture that goes on in it.
Yeah, for sure. Right away, though, there is a weird paradox with this movie in my mind, in terms of tone, because everybody in the movie is so deadly serious, but things like the score and the dialogue is like weirdly wacky and over the top.
Yeah.
Like there are weird, like poppy songs that pop up throughout the movie. Like case in point, the opening when Donnie wakes up in the street on his bike, on that like forest path and then just rides through town. He looks so downtrodden, but this song that's playing is like weirdly upbeat. And that carries throughout. This score is so strange to me. And you know me, I'm a score guy, but this music is really kind of clashes with the rest of the tone of the movie.
I think it's one of those things that It's what they were going for. You have these songs that might sound upbeat but have just horribly depressing lyrics. I think they were going for that more artsy feel in this one. Like, oh, look how sad this guy is, but here's a poppy 80s song. And on top of it, it takes place in 1988, so they wanted the soundtrack to reflect that time period as well. And there wasn't really a lot of depressing songs in the 80s. People were happy.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of depressing sounding songs, maybe, because a lot of pop music that you listen back to has a lot of depressing lyrics from that era.
Like 99 Luft balloons, or however
Like,
you say. Oh,
yeah,
it's about the nuclear apocalypse. Great.
exactly. But yeah, no, it's just a weird back and forth tone, and we meet Donnie, who has the strangest family I think I've ever seen in my life.
Do you want me to do my production notes?
Yeah, go for it. Please, whatever you can do to help me solve the mystery of this movie.
All right, well, before we dig into the plot, here's some background on the production. So the first
Thank
piece.
you. Thank you for bringing that up and reminding me that we do that because this movie has me all out of sorts.
I can tell. Let me get my throat cleared. Let me get my game face on. Let me make myself look pretty. Okay. So,
Job well done.
thank you. As far as production goes, Drew Barrymore was actually one of the people who saved this movie, because when the director, Richard Kelly, was pitching this out to production companies, I mean, you can imagine that conversation. Hey, I had this movie about this weird time traveling teenager that's trapped in a tangent dimension. It didn't go over that well with production companies. So Drew Barrymore, who plays the teacher in this, jumped in and was pretty, she had a pretty high opinion of the movie. She believed in it. So she said, well, what if my production company, Flower Films, just makes it? And that's how it got a production company behind it.
Okay, so that leads me to an important question, because I have never watched the trailer for this. How the fuck do you market this movie? What do you sell it as?
Well, that was one of the problems when it came out. And that was going to be my third production note, but they had a hard time marketing and advertising this one because, as I think we all know, it starts with a jet engine falling through Donnie's room. Well, this movie was set to come out a month after 9/11. And if you remember back then, there was like a super sensitivity to anything airplane related. So they had to market this in a way that they couldn't really show the plane part falling through the room. So, how do you do that? That's the integral part of this movie. So, they had trouble on the marketing and advertising side of it. And that tended to lead to it not doing great at the box office. But when it came out later on DVD, people really vibed with it. And that's where that whole underground following comes into play.
Yeah, I think I saw it was like a $5 million budget and it made like 7.5 million.
Yeah, it didn't really do well at all. And like I said, part of that is just because how do you advertise something like that in a post 9/11 world that soon?
Well, the only other movie I can think of where they really and I know there's been a lot of it, but like, you know, one movie that comes to mind around this same era that it was like, how do you market this is Unbreakable from M. Night Shyamalan. Or look at something like Monster Squad from the 80s, where like they didn't know who to target the movie towards. So it was like aimed for several demographics and hit almost none of them.
I could see that happening with this one because if you're marketing it as a teen drama, yeah, it is that, and there's an audience for it, but it's so much weirder than just something like what was popular back then, like American Pie, but less comedic. It's definitely not that.
Yeah, no, this is a movie very heavily centered on teen angst, it seems like. And, but I don't know, would maybe that's them hitting their mark is with the teens around that era? Because it's such a moody movie kind of centered around people in that age category.
Yeah, I know growing up around that time, I was 12 or 13 when this would have came out. And like I said, my brother showed it to me. He was 18 back then, around that age. So I know a lot of people around his grade like this, not necessarily people my age range. So I think that's probably the who they went for. It would make sense to. I mean, you just look at the majority of the characters. They're all teenagers, at least the main ones. So, I mean, I guess that's who you would market this to, but I think adults could enjoy it too because of all the weird science fiction thriller elements to it.
Well, this is a weird thing to try to like capitalize on teen angst with, because look at your hero, so to speak, with Donnie Darko. You know, you think of like teen angst and you look at something like Lost Boys, where they're like very loud in terms of imagery, like loud, boisterous characters. And they're angsty that way because they're very out and about with being rebellious. And then there's Donnie, who's like very introverted in his rebellion.
Well, they were different times too. I think it was when we were talking about Death Becomes Her, it was either you or Anthony brought up of how you looked rebellious in the 80s and just having watched Return of the Living Dead with the punk kids in that with the leather and the chains and the piercings. They were much very outwardly rebelling against something. What was it? Probably nothing.
Yeah, this matches the feel of the grunge era, I think, in terms of like music.
Well, yeah, and keep in mind, this was like 2, 3 years before the huge emo explosion as well. And this is a very emo movie. If you set it to a modern soundtrack, I'm sure some My Chemical Romance would have been in there. How you doing?
Probably. Yeah, no, that makes sense. That was kind of a transitional period there with the late 90s into the mid to late 2000s in terms of like culture for teens.
And it's weird to think about because while when you look at the 80s to the early 2000s, there wasn't really a whole lot of difference on how we grew up. But then when you look from like 2001 to now, it's totally changed. Like there's phones and social media and so much that you can get into as a kid that we just never really had before like 2010 or something. So yeah, it's just weird to think that growing up in that time period wasn't that far removed from the 80s. Because when you're a kid looking back, then you're like, oh my God, the 80s, that was like 20 years ago. That's crazy. And now it's just like that wasn't far off at all. And
And
times today
now,
didn't really change a
yeah.
lot.
And now here we are, you know, 23 years removed from this movie, and look at how different the world is.
God, somebody said that Grand Theft Auto Vice City now takes place. Or when it was released is so much longer than the 80s to 2002 was. And that just blows my mind every time.
Yeah.
Did I explain that right? Did that make any sense?
Sort of.
It
But we'll roll with it.
made sense
But
to me, God damn it.
we'll roll with it. But I totally jumped all over your third production note, so I apologize. But that was just a question that popped into my head as you were talking about the production. So what is your second production note on this?
Well, that's actually good because you're talking about the whole teenage thing. They actually wanted Vince Vaughn, who was, I believe, in his early 30s when this would have came out. They wanted him to play Donnie Darko. But
What? What?
yeah, so I forget all the stuff behind it, but they ended up with Gyllenhaal. But like, why would you cast somebody in their 30s to play a 18-year-old?
Thank goodness that didn't happen. I love Vince Vaughn, but damn, that would have been weird.
Yeah, it would have been like those movies like Prom Night where you have 40-year-olds playing
Yeah, this
16-year-olds.
was not a 80s slasher with 30-year-olds playing 18-year-olds. Like that would feel so surreal and so out of place in 2001.
That never gets old, though. I was watching Prom Night to do it with the guys over at Horror Stands, and it just stands out so fucking funny. Like, there's a dude with a mustache and balding, and he's like, hey, how you doing? I'm 16. It's like, are you?
Yeah, watch any Friday the 13th movie, absolutely. Nah. I love Vince Vaughn, but no. And he was in a strange place in his career in that time, because he had just 2 years prior done that shot for shot remake of Psycho.
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah. Yeah, the Gus Van Sant Psycho remake that they did, that was like a shot for shot remake.
Was he the
Yeah, he was Norman Bates.
Bates
That's what I'm saying. He like or 1998, I guess, is when he did that. So 3 years prior. And yeah, Vince Vaughn played Norman Bates.
That's awesome.
Okay, well, that's yeah, that would have changed the course of history heavily for this movie. Like it already happens that way in the movie that history has changed in some way. So okay, so anything else on that one, or did you want to go back through the marketing with the third production note? Was there more to add on that, or did we already talk about it?
We covered everything I knew about it,
Okay. Anything
which
else?
is, I feel like I spent a week with this movie.
Yeah, you did, because we were supposed to talk about it last week and I just was super busy, so.
Well, every day I was just like doing more research and trying to figure out more about it. So I feel
And
like this movie's.
are you better or worse for
Oh, I'm always a worse person no matter what I
it?
do. This movie's not going to save that.
Okay, well, any other production notes on this one?
Enough about my scumbaggery. Nope, that's all the production notes I have. I mean,
Oh.
Gyllenhaal had some pretty cool input. Like, he's the one that got Maggie Gyllenhaal involved, and he came up with Frank the Rabbit's distorted voice because he's traveling through time. Oh, Seth Rogen, this was his first movie, too. Did you see him in there?
No, where was he?
He's one of the main bad guy teenagers, one of his lackeys.
Okay, interesting. I did notice Spencer from iCarly in here. The one student that comes up to the microphone in the lecture hall and says, "How do I tell what I want to be when I grow up?"
I know iCarly was a little bit after my time. The last
Yeah.
Nick show I really remember was Drake and Josh.
He was in that too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was Crazy Steve.
Oh, he wasn't Drake or Josh.
No. No, he's the easily angered theater employee.
I remember one of them worked in a movie theater, but anyway.
Okay, so I
They both
grow
turned out to be a couple of D-bags, didn't
Okay, so Donnie Darko.
Yes.
Bro, my head hurts so bad already trying to think about where to start with this thing. So I did go look at what people were saying this movie meant, or like what actually happens, because by the end of the movie, I honestly had no idea what happened. And funny story, when I went to watch this last week, I was gonna watch it at like 10 o'clock at night and I fell asleep before I could do that. So I woke up at like 5:30 the next morning before I had to go to work, and I was like, okay, I'll watch part of it now or maybe just watch the whole thing. So 5:30 rolls around, I was like half asleep and had the first 40 minutes of Donnie Darko playing, and I thought I had a grasp on it. And then when I tried to go back later to finish the movie for you and I to record, the first 40 minutes were just like a fever dream. Like they were completely wiped from my brain.
That's really weird. It's like the Men in Black came in and traumatized
Yeah,
you.
like I tried to go
Hypnotized
back.
you. Hopefully it didn't traumatize
Yeah,
you.
well,
What are you doing with that probe, buddy?
oh God. I came back to watch where I had left off at, which is when they did the school press conference after the school got vandalized. And I was like, wait, why are we at the school? So I had to restart the movie. But yeah, so the movie is really jump started by Donnie's near miss with the engine from the plane that falls like right where he would have been in his room. Which I feel like the engine, not to poke holes in anything, but I feel like the engine might have just toppled the whole house if it fell with that much force.
Well, now you're getting into physics, man. Come on. I'm not Albert Einstein over here.
I'm just saying that was a little like the way the family kind of shook around when it hit the roof. I was like, I feel like there'd be more damage than that, but
It almost was like a Jersey earthquake. Like,
yeah.
huh? Something weird's going on outside of Jet. jet engine just didn't fall through the fucking roof.
But that's kind of what kickstarts the plot. And that's when we first meet Frank, who is pretty much the icon of Donnie Darko. It's, that bunny mask is all over the covers and the posters for it, which is easily visually the most like striking thing about the movie. I was a little caught off guard because I thought it might be like a CGI creature, because there is CGI here, but it's literally just a suit.
Yeah, just a guy in a bunny suit.
It is literally just a costume.
Yeah, and when that plane engine falls through where Donnie would have been, the whole reason he's not in there is because Frank was calling to him to get him outside of the house because Frank needs him.
And that's when Frank starts to get Donnie to do things, and it's revealed that Donnie is the one that vandalized the school.
Well, Frank tells him the world is going to end in what, 28 days?
28 days, and then a whole lot of specific hours and seconds and things.
Do you want me to go into like what actually happened as we go, or save it for the end?
In terms of what?
Like what happened when that engine crashed through the roof? Like it created a, what do they call it? A
Oh, you wanna?
tangent.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Let's see if we can walk to it, because I really want to try to get a grasp on what happened before that. Because the last 20 minutes essentially are where everything is revealed, but the build up is where I got confused.
Okay, let's do that.
So Donnie is revealed to have vandalized the school and essentially like burst a water line and flooded the school, so school is canceled.
Done clog the shitter.
Dude, this the dialogue though here, like what are these students saying
Which one are you referring to?
when they're at the bus stop?
Is that where they're talking about Smurf porn?
No, that's when they're like in a little hangout spot in a field. But that's another good example. What is this dialogue?
I don't know. I would never watch Smurf porn. I've seen the ads for it, though. Are you a Smurf porn kind of guy?
No.
Me neither. I'm more of a Snorks porn kind of guy. They have the
Oh.
shit on their head. It's actually their genitalia. It's pretty interesting.
Oh my goodness. No, I the, again, going back to the paradox, man, what is this dialogue here?
So there's always the argument to be made in some of the classic horror games on PS1 or PS2. Oh, the dialogue was written like that or acted like that to add to the uneasiness or uncanniness of it all. Did you feel like that was the case here, or do you just feel like it wasn't well-written dialogue?
I don't think that it's the, well, I don't know. I don't know
Or not well delivered? Option three.
that's the thing, man. I can't figure out why it feels so strange. It's like half the things that they're saying are just bizarre and weird, and the way they're delivering it is just weird. Like, case in point, when the Darko family has to live at a hotel because the engine crashed through their house, and okay, so there's Donnie, and then there's his sister, the older sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal. I forget her name.
We'll call her Maggie.
Hold on, I should know the character names at least.
That's one thing. I put all this research in and couldn't tell you who's who. Yeah, that guy.
No, not at all. So hold on.
I'm always terrible with character names, though, unless they say them a million times.
Elizabeth is her name.
Lizzie. How you doing, Liz?
And then the youngest sibling is Samantha or Sam. But
Sammy.
case in point, strange dialogue. They're staying in a hotel room, and Sam and Elizabeth and Donnie are like watching TV. And Sam says, "Why do I have to sleep with Donnie? He stinks." And
Well,
then
teenage boy, he probably does.
Donnie says, "When you go to sleep tonight, I'm gonna fart in your face."
Just kind of seems like something dumb kids would say to each other, though.
But they deliver it so seriously, man. I can't.
Oh, gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. It's such weird performances in this movie. Jake Gyllenhaal knocks it out of the park, but everybody's talking so weirdly. Drew Barrymore in this movie is an enigma to me. Like,
What's that?
what the hell is her character when, and I couldn't figure out who it was. I was like, where do I know this love interest actress from? It's Jenna Malone.
What's she been in? Anything I would know?
She, do you ever watch The Ruins
Oh, I've heard of that.
with
They
the killer vines?
go to like the South American temples, the vines
Yep.
attack them. Yeah, never saw it.
Oh, we need to do an episode on that. She's awesome in that.
Is she related to Post Malone?
No, I don't think so.
Fucking badass.
Yeah, she's got a huge career though. I know her from The Ruins and a movie called The Neon Demon.
Well, that sounds cool.
Very, very good movie. I guess she's in one of the Hunger Games movies as well. Or
Oh, yeah.
three of the Hunger Games movies, actually.
Damn, good for her. Those are huge.
Yeah, so she's a big actress, but she plays the love interest here. And
And what was her name? Rebecca? No, that was the sister. Love interest
shit.
is the sister.
Hold
Is a
on.
Tennessee tale.
Yeah, hold on. I can tell you right now. Gretchen.
Gretchen's her name?
Yeah.
God, what is this? Like a fairy tale from Norway? A lot of old Gretchen over there.
And then Drew Barrymore plays their English teacher.
Dude, how sexy is she too? My God.
I mean, Drew Barrymore is always great. I almost didn't recognize her.
I definitely didn't.
I think it was the darker hair.
And the glasses too. I'm like, who is this person?
But yeah, Jenna Malone, Gretchen walks in and is like, "Hey, I think they put me in the wrong English class." And Drew Barrymore says, "You look like you belong here."
Have a seat with the boy you think's the most handsome.
Yeah, sit next to the boy you think is cutest. And she sits next to Donnie. And then like Donnie and Gretchen have like a romantic exchange where he says, "You want to go with me?" And she says, "Go where?" He's like, "Oh, that's what we call it here. You know, you want to go with me." I'm like, "What is this?" I can't,
Yeah,
bro.
like go steady.
I know what he's talking about.
I didn't at first. I'm like, go where?
It's just the dialogue, man. It's like, have you ever seen The Happening with
Oh
from
yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan? You know how it's supposed to be like a really intense movie, but everybody's delivering these weirdly comedic takes?
Yeah, I love that movie.
That's how it feels watching Donnie Darko. You already brought up Smurf porn. Like
Yeah.
that's like a 2 minute dialogue.
Because Papa Smurf gangbangs or videotapes the Smurfs gangbanging
What?
Smurfette. Adds up to me. I
Yeah, I
wish my
just
teachers had what looked like Drew Barrymore. Mine always looked like Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yeah, no, I had to put a pin in this because every performance is so strange.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't really pick up on that. Maybe just because the whole essence of the movie is so fucking weird, it just fit for me. And I was also drinking a Four Loko or two while I was watching it,
Well,
so
that
maybe.
explains a lot.
I
That explains a lot, my friend.
thought this was a masterpiece, man.
Yeah, pass me another Four Loco, absolutely.
I needed them to get through this one. 2.5 hours or whatever? My
Yeah,
God.
can we talk about that, man? The maybe this one is more concrete in explanation, but holy shit, this director's cut is long.
Yeah, 2 hours and 13 minutes, and wow, I thought this movie could have benefited from being about hour 45. Take
Oh,
out a
I was
half
going to say
hour.
shave off at least 30 minutes.
Yeah, hour 45, hour 30, I think would have been a better spot for this. Maybe the theatrical cut was.
Yeah, so essentially this is kind of just a day in the life of Donnie Darko for 28 days until we get to when the Earth or when the world is supposed to end.
Yeah, because basically just a bunch of teenage stuff happens, but in the backdrop there's talk of time travel and this, that, and the third, but it's not really at the forefront. A lot of it is just him Living his life.
Okay, so question.
Answer.
I hope so. The chapter headers that we're seeing where the book pages are opening, are those pages from the time travel book that he gets from the teacher?
That's how I took it. Either that or
Okay.
the book that Grandma Death wrote.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, where he talks to that one professor and he goes, I could get in trouble for giving you this.
Yeah, that's how I took it. The chapters correlated with the book that he was reading.
Yeah, so Frank the Rabbit essentially asks Donnie, "Do you believe in time travel?" When Donnie's asking him, "Where'd you come from?" And I took it watching it that the world actually was going to end, and that Frank was just some harbinger, because there was talk of maybe it was almost like a Final Destination style thing. This kid narrowly escapes death and has this harbinger here that need he needs to listen to save everybody else. But then there's a lot of strange talk with the psychiatrist when he's under hypnosis. Or even when he's not under hypnosis, he's talking about the weird neighborly lady who says everything in life dies alone or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's this whole talk about when things die, they die alone. And he uses an example of his dog from when he was a kid. Dude, I'm grasping at straws here. Like there's so many things to dive into, and yet nothing to dive into at the exact same time. So did you find any themes as to what this movie is about? It very clearly deals a lot with death, and one not necessarily a theme, but I was Googling essentially what is Donnie Darko about.
Okay.
And I went to a Reddit thread, and people were talking about how, because early on Donnie Darko, when he introduces himself to what the hell is his love interest name?
Gretchen.
Gretchen, yes. I keep wanting to say Bridget for some reason, and I don't know why.
Bridget Jones' Diary.
No. So he's talking to Gretchen and she says, "Donnie Darko, that sounds like a superhero name." And he goes, "How do you know I'm not?" So I wondered if maybe it was almost like an unbreakable scenario where it was like a weird, realistic take on a superhero where he has to make this ultimate sacrifice to save people from the fates that are awaiting them. But then someone on Reddit was talking about how Frank is like a way, like a vessel to tell Donnie, like, hey, you're always fated to die, but here's like your opportunity to have good experiences before that happens. So it's like closing the loop sort of thing. Like he gets to fall in love, his sister gets to go to college, and just things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to take it. And I don't think anybody would be wrong for their opinion of what all this means. How I took it was when the jet engine crashes through the house, it does kill Donnie Darko. But
So you think he dies immediately when the jet engine first falls?
I think in that universe he does, but it creates a different universe that Frank comes to because he needs to get Donnie. This is going to be so hard to explain. He comes to get Donnie out of the room so that he doesn't die when that jet engine falls through it, so that he can ensure in this universe that he takes all the steps he needs to return that jet engine to the real universe. And by doing so, that means he's going to die.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, and then
So
the other
when the
interpretation
jet
I
engine when the sorry, when the jet
go
engine
for it.
falls when the jet engine falls through his room, that's from a different dimension. So in order to have the main universe not collapse in on itself, he needs to take that jet engine and put it in the main universe. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
So when Frank says the world is going to end in 28 days, their created universe will end in 28 days no matter what. But he has that time to get the engine into the main universe so that that timeline can continue and his family's alive and everything.
Oh, see, I took it as when he says the world's going to end. I didn't take it by the end as the whole world's going to end. I took it as your world, like your life is going to end. And I think what I gathered is like there really was no way out of this loop for Donnie. It was just always fated that he was going to end up being crushed by the jet engine. But again, another thing that I saw was that
Well, before you
maybe.
get to that, it's like a temporal paradox, like we saw in A Haunting on Hill House with Nell. She has to hang herself so that she can haunt herself, and she has to haunt herself so that she can hang herself. The jet engine has to crash through his roof so that it can create a different timeline so that he can get the jet engine back to the main timeline where it will kill him. It's all
Yeah, see, I always took it as just one like timeline, rather
gotcha.
than like alternate dimensions. And again, this Reddit thread that I was reading, somebody was saying that they thought Frank was showing Donnie like, hey, here's what's going to happen like to your loved ones if you don't accept your fate. Because Donnie is saying like, I don't want to die alone. I don't want to be alone. Like, that's what scares me. But Frank could be like a messenger there saying like, hey, death is inevitable. This is a tragic way to go. But if you don't do that, then like, here's what's going to happen to your love interest. Here's what's going to happen to your sister and your mom.
I could see that, and then that would make Donnie like that Christ figure in storytelling. He has to sacrifice himself, be a martyr, so that the ones he loves can carry on.
And you
So I've.
know, when they get to the end, you know, they show his mom and again, why do I keep wanting to say the wrong name?
Gretchen.
Gretchen, thank you. They by the end, Gretchen and Rose, his mom, seem to know each other when his actual death happens.
Well, it's the idea that even though things didn't happen in this timeline, if they happened in a different timeline, there may be that residual energy that carries over into the present.
Yeah, no, I don't know, man. I think again, it's like there is a hero element to it, but then there's like this weird look at death and like essentially saying that's just part of life. And I think there was like a dialogue in a classroom where Jake or yeah, Donnie was talking about like, why do I care if a rabbit dies,
Yeah.
like why should I care, you know, about that? And then by the end, with his own death, it's shown that everybody cares. Like to you, somebody dying might just be this insignificant thing, but it's a part of life, and people should care when somebody dies.
That's interesting. I didn't pick up on that. I was more so focused with the dimensional time traveling.
No, that's what I'm saying, man. I don't know. I have no clue.
I don't think you're wrong. I think there's certainly you could take that away from it, because when he says who cares what the rabbit dies, that could also be referencing that he killed Frank in the rabbit outfit. And who cares if this guy dies?
Okay, let's talk about that for a second.
Let's do it.
So Frank is in human form, that is Elizabeth, his sister's boyfriend, who was dressed as that character, Frank.
Yeah.
Is his name Frank, or is that
Yeah.
just his character? Okay, his name is Frank.
His name's Frank. That's
Okay,
why there's a rabbit walking around with the name Frank.
so essentially, when Donnie evades his fate, what happens to Gretchen is she gets run over by Frank by accident.
Yeah, because they're getting mugged by the badass kids, and the one's choking her.
Yes, and he throws her into the road, and then Frank accidentally runs her over. And
And
then
then Donnie shoots Frank.
Donnie puts a bullet in Frank's eye. And then it's after that that he takes Gretchen's body to the place where the dimensional portal is going to open. And somehow fixes the past events.
Well, he uses telekinesis to bring that jet engine that his mom's on and the sister are on to bring that into the main universe. And that's how everything gets fixed because everything's in the right order again.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because why is Frank his harbinger? Why is Frank his messenger? Of all the characters that could be the one telling him, like, you need to fix this, why is Frank the Rabbit the one to tell him this?
When I was looking up stuff and doing research, it was something about living vessels and dead vessels, and Frank was a dead vessel that knew how everything would end. So I guess the universe picked Frank to tell Donnie about all this shit. I don't really have a concrete answer as to why it was specifically him, but he was the one trying to keep him on track and get the timelines set in the correct order.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like such a random character to have as like the focal point of the message. Also, can we start a band called Dead Vessel?
Fuck yeah. Well, I think from a production standpoint, why they picked him is because that rabbit suit. Look how visually striking it is. It's
Oh
memorable.
yeah. No, v from a
Associated with
visual
the movie, so.
Yeah, from a visual standpoint, it makes sense why. It's just as a character, it didn't make a lot of sense to me why that was the one telling him about what was going to happen.
Dead vessel.
What
Coming to Rochester.
the fuck is up? We're Dead Vessel.
What's some shitty towns? What's up, Knoxville, Tennessee? Boy, I'm trashing Tennessee tonight. Sorry, anybody in Tennessee.
Yeah, for real.
I've never even been there. I might love it.
What's your hang up with Tennessee, man?
I don't know. It just keeps popping in my head, and I think because I've been listening to a lot of country music.
Okay, well,
Down on the Tennessee line, here.
bro, what the fuck is this episode?
Way down yonder on the Chattahoochee, it gets hotter than a hoochie coochie.
God.
Anyway, enough about my failed country career.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about something here, because I don't have a
Okay.
lot to dive into with the movie specifically, but Sky's email did hit on something important with horror. Something that we can really dive into.
Okay.
Ambiguity.
Oh, yeah.
There is, in my mind, a scale, like a balance with ambiguity, where you can tell us too much and it ruins it, or you can tell us too little and it ruins it. And you got to
Yeah.
sort of find that balance of ambiguity. On that scale, which way does this movie lean for you?
Gun to my head, I would say too little because I had to do a lot of research. Like I said, I feel like I spent a week with this movie. I feel like I had to do a lot of research to really understand what the point of this all was. It wasn't as upfront as it could have been.
Yes, and so we are in agreement with that. I also think this movie doesn't tell you enough. Whereas, just as an example, a movie we've covered that was also ambiguous but told us a little bit more and still is a satisfying watch is The Shining,
Yeah.
where they leave just enough threads dangling, like with the picture at the end and the whole storyline of the caretaker. Those are just little plot details that you can debate about and like sort of think about, but the narrative of The Shining is there.
Yeah.
Where I think Donnie Darko sort of, I don't know if fails is the right word, but that's kind of how it feels in my mind, is that I don't think the narrative comes together. I think it's just too many threads and directions going on. that it doesn't feel cohesive by the time we get to the end.
I think that for me, I'm kind of right there with you. For me, when it got to the end, I was able to put a lot of it together in those last 20 minutes, but I still wasn't where I was after doing research. And it's tough with horror because you want the element of the unknown to be there. That's what makes things scary, is we don't know about them. But at that same time, like you were saying with The Shining, you also want a cohesive narrative. And this one does bounce around a lot. It doesn't explain a lot. It certainly doesn't spoon feed you what's happening. So yeah, it definitely tells you little of what's happening. But I think I understood it, and also this being my second watch at least, I think I was also more familiar with it than you were coming into this one.
Yeah, fair point.
And I feel like this is one of those movies too, like The Shining, that does benefit from multiple watches if you have the time, because this is a long ass movie.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate because this movie has been talked about so much for so many years that I was like really excited to watch it, and I'm glad I did watch it because I definitely want to, be able to talk about it when people bring it up, and I understand why it's a cult following movie for sure. I think it does speak to a lot of themes of sort of being an outsider and teenage angst and things like that. But I just think that I don't know. I think where it falls flat is just the writing and the narrative, where it's like there's little parts of the movie where I'm like, okay, this is kind of intriguing, like the time travel and like Frank the Rabbit. But then when they bring it all together, it just doesn't come together in a strong way for me. Again, with Frank being such kind of an insignificant character, we've never seen him before, but he's like the through line of the movie.
Yeah, it's almost like, well, he even says it in the movie that Ex Machina, where something otherworldly almost comes through at the end and pulls everything together or saves the day or whatnot. I'm wondering too, not having seen it and just heard about it, if maybe it suffered from that overhype syndrome for you.
Yes, probably.
Like,
Because again, it's so iconic. It's referenced so much.
yeah, I mean, hearing about something for 20 years, when you finally sit down to watch it, I don't see how that could possibly live up to the hype when you've just heard about it for that long.
Well, I think this might be a prime example because again, I don't know, I didn't know what the movie was about going in. So I didn't go in with like exact expectations, but I guess I had some expectations at the exact same time where I was kind of like maybe thinking I knew what I was going to get, but then I didn't get it. So
Well, think about like a 20-year-old guy, and you brought up the movie The Shining. Think about a dude who's grown up all of his life hearing about The Shining, but has never sat down to watch it. Not saying this is your case, but it's just interesting to think about a movie as classic as that. Say he never saw The Shining, finally sits down to watch it, and he's just like, that's it. Like, I wonder about that. Could people see that after hearing about it so much and just be like, meh?
well, I do know this one guy who's about 35 who has a similar experience with a little movie called The Thing.
I'm not fucking watching that movie. Enough with that. God.
You're missing out, man.
I love John Carpenter, but enough about that.
That one actually is not a case of overhyped.
Yeah, until I watch it and it's like, oh yeah, it was
No,
everything.
I'm telling you, bro. Get some Four Locos in you if it makes it easier. I promise you will have a good ass time.
Four Locos make everything easier.
Do you have anything else like to talk about with Donnie Darko?
Do you just want to give some final thoughts? I mean, we've been going about an hour on it. We still have horror news.
You say horror nose?
Horror news. My bad.
What
I need to enunciate better. God, I'm fucking up in this last hour.
are words?
Yeah, right. I'm the one who's overhyped now. As in, I'm overly hyped.
You go first, man. Do you have any final thoughts on Donnie Darko?
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting movie. I think when I was talking to you, I gave it like a 7 out of 10. And like I said before, it's not a movie I dislike. It's certainly not one of my go-to movies. I think there's a lot of interesting aspects to it. It dives into a lot of different stuff. We talked about the time travel and interdimensional things and all kinds of craziness. But at the end of the day, Kevin, like you were saying, is it a decent, cohesive narrative? If I had to say so, like, it's not as strong as it could have been. I'll put it that way. The narrative definitely doesn't pull everything together and explain enough without explaining too much. Boy, that sounds like I'm asking for the world in a way that really makes it a strong story. And again, I'm the beyond all of storytelling over here, so take what I say with a grain of salt.
It's true.
The way you said that cracked me up.
Oh, that's where my brain is at, man. I'm fried from the watch and trying to make sense of things. Final thoughts on Donnie Darko. I'm glad to have finally seen it. So that I can talk about it if people ask me what I think about it. I agree with you. I don't think it's a movie you watch for the narrative. I think it's a movie to maybe contemplate on deeper questions, but I feel like you might have to get your own answers to answer the questions.
Yeah, I like that.
Because I don't think the movie's going to give you the answers. So I can respect it for being unique. I can confidently say I've never seen another movie like this. But I don't think it's for me. I don't think I'll be rewatching this one, which kind of sucks, because I feel like you hit the nail on the head with it's probably a movie that benefits from multiple viewings and you pick up more when you watch it. I just didn't really have that great of an experience watching it. It was kind of frustrating to watch, in all honesty. It just I don't know. It really fell flat in closing the dimensions and the
Huh.
timeline for me.
Well, I wonder too, we talked about all the tropes that were big at the time this was made, and I'm wondering if that plays into it, that it's a product of its time to a degree.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, going back to ambiguity, I like a balance. I don't mind being spoon-fed a few things to make things make sense. Don't give me everything with like a fucking like 20-minute dialogue of like, I'm the bad guy, let me explain my master plan.
Now that I have you in my trap, Mr.
Yeah.
Bond.
My favorite example of that is House of the Dead, which is like not even a long dialogue. But there's a great dialogue exchange where the villain captures the hero, and the hero says, "You created it all so you could be immortal. Why?" And the villain just goes, "To live forever."
Short and sweet. I always
Yeah,
loved the voice acting in the House of the Dead video game, man. That was wild stuff.
no, we got to talk about that movie, man. It's such a piece of shit, but it's so funny.
I was just watching something the other day where that happened, and the main antagonist was like, "Here's why I'm doing all of this." Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, yeah, we know why. We've been watching this movie. Like,
Yeah.
imagine if Darth Vader got Luke Skywalker and he's like, "The reason I'm doing all of this is to take over the galaxy," and blah, blah, blah. Fuck out of
Oh
here.
God, can you please like redub Star Wars and do that as the Darth Vader voice?
Would never dishonor James Earl Jones that way, man.
No, I'm not saying erase it. I'm just saying, can you just do like an overdub of Darth Vader and like the rebel scum? I want them alive.
Sound like fucking Gonzo from the Muppets.
You sound like you have like a piece of like steak in your teeth when you're talking.
Maybe I do. Might be Tuna.
Arnold.
I am Darth Vader. Dude, I can't do the voice like that. It's iconic.
Oh
I wish
gosh.
I could throw my voice like Darth Vader. I'd talk like that all the time. Imagine at work. Hello, this is. I'm done with the Darth
You
Vader
would.
impressions. This is awful. I'm sorry, everybody.
Oh God. That I would require you to talk like that on the podcast all the time.
Well, I feel like I'm doing like part my caveman voice, like me, Roy, ooh. And then like I'm trying to put a Darth Vader spin on it. It's just not fucking happening, bro.
Oh God, I'm crying now. That's fantastic. Just an overdub of the intro scene of Darth Vader in A New Hope with that voice, please.
I don't even know what he says. He just comes out and chokes a motherfucker. A
Okay.
badass.
Yeah, exactly. So, needless to say, I think we're done talking about Donnie Darko, but that's my thoughts on it. I recommend it to be seen as I do everything, but it's not for me. And I won't rewatch it anytime soon, if at all, to be honest. So, but hey, can't win them all.
Yeah, I don't know if I will. Wow, now I'm doing horrible impressions and have mush mouth.
How's that Four Loko tasting over
Oh my God, I would at least give me justification. I feel like I
there?
speak and think better on those. I don't remember what I was going to say. Oh yeah, I don't know if I'll ever watch this one again. I
Yeah.
might, but it's not like I'm going to be craving it. Oh my God, I need my Donnie Darko, bro. Got any of that
No.
Frank the Rabbit?
No, it's also inexplicably a horror movie. A Halloween movie at the very end too.
Yeah, the whole thing takes place over the course of October.
Yeah, but the Halloween imagery doesn't come in until like the last 20 minutes.
They're late decorators. They're not feeling the season all the time.
That is unacceptable.
I know, I still have all my skulls up and skeletons and ghosts and chasing masks.
Oh my.
Ah.
Skeletons and ghosts and Jason masks. Oh my. Okay. You want to talk about some horror news?
Let's talk about some horror news. We're having a good time. If I was in the news, I'd put in some buffer stories before this one, but we're not in the news. So this feels like an old story at this point, but last Friday, unfortunately, Tony Todd died. I know I talked to you about this a little bit, but Tony Todd, man, the original Candyman, he was the personification of death in Final Destination movies. He was in Death House with all the horror legends. And I'm sure he was in a bunch of other stuff that I can't think about, but instead of like looking up a big long eulogy on him, I just wanted to more so give our thoughts on him and how we remember him because the outpouring of support was crazy. Like, I've never seen so much love and respect for somebody on social media who had recently passed away the way I did him.
this one really hit me hard, because he again is a very prevalent voice in horror. But I just met him like a little over a year ago. And he was the sweetest human being that I think I've ever met. He was so cool. I was at Silver Scream Con in Danvers, Massachusetts, the con that Ice Nine Kills does, and he was like top of my list that I wanted to meet. And he was one of the three big guests. Like they had this one room. It was like Spencer from Ice Nine Kills, Skeet Ulrich, and Tony Todd. And I really was nervous because I'm like, he's a huge guest. And he was one of the first people announced. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to get through his line. But we got there Friday and I made a beeline for his line. And I made it through. He was the first one that I met. My mom and I got to meet him. And dude, I hope that, he was 68 or 69, probably 67 maybe when I met him. I hope I have that much energy and just good vibes about me when I'm in that age range. Because the dude was just so like funny and welcoming and nice and just really all about putting a smile on people's faces. And like you look at the photo that my mom and I took with him and he just had us cracking up. And I mean, his voice is iconic. He was in The Crow as well. He was the voice of the Fallen for Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen. He was, the voice of Venom for that latest Spider-Man game. And then, all of his horror career, the Hatchet movies, Final Destination, Candyman, just so many roles that he's done. Even if the movie's not great, people heard it. I didn't really like Death House that much. But he was great in it. He was just a, just, I mean, he's the one and only Tony Todd. He was an amazing person, amazing actor. His presence was felt every time he was on screen, and he was always bringing a lot of entertainment to everybody. So I'm very, very grateful that I got to meet him before he passed away. So rest in peace, Tony Todd, and I love you, and I know we all love you, and thanks for all the amazing entertainment and smiles that you brought us. And what an amazing outpouring of support from all the horror con groups and people that have met him. Just so many pictures flying left and right of people that met him, and not one person had anything bad to say about him.
Yeah, that was the thing that stuck out to me is he just seemed like an all-around good dude, and that sucks, not just in horror, but when the world loses somebody like that, it feels like a wind taken out of your sails kind of deal. 'Cause you're like, man, we lost another good dude today, and that sucks.
Yeah, and
But
again, especially having just stood next to him, a little over a year ago, just so surreal. But when something like that happens, someone you really look up to passes away, and you've met them, or even if you've just watched them for a long time, it's very surreal. And yeah, that one hit me hard, man. And I remember you texted me that, and I, very, very sad news, but his work's gonna live on. He's forever one of the greats, and his work's gonna be passed down forever through the horror community. So thank God and everybody in the horror community that we have this community to continue sharing his legacy. So
amen to that. I don't think I can put anything better than what you just said. I concur with all that for sure.
well, thanks for letting me keep talking there for a minute. I just that one just that hit me hard, man. That was a difficult loss. And rest in peace to an amazing person, and what a talent, man. Just one of the greatest.
Right on. All right, the next one, we are going to the box office. We talked about the release of Heretic last time when Anthony was on here. And I've spoken with him. He said he went to see it. He enjoyed it. But at the box office, it looks like it's on track to reach 25 million global in its first 2 weeks. And that's going to bring it to the break-even line. One thing I learned is that movies have to make like 2.5 times what their budget was to be considered a success. And it looks like this one's on track to do it because it was made for a budget of less than 10 million bucks. So looks like it's going to be another successful movie for May 24.
Well, I mean, I don't feel like A24 movies are ever like the box office juggernauts,
Very true, yeah.
but they're always well received critically. So like people who like more artistic horror, or just artistic films in general, because A24 will obviously do stuff that's not always horror. I think they make what they need to make with maybe some extra profit, because I don't feel like Hereditary or Midsommar or anything like that ever were box office juggernauts. They were just really well received critically and made their budget and then some back to be able to, keep the film studio going very successfully.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the case with this one. It's sitting around a 7 out of 10 on most sites, so it seems like it's a pretty decent movie.
Yeah, and I've yet to see it. I want to see it sometime soon. But yeah, I mean, glad to see that A24 is still going strong. I think their output is is incredible. There's been one movie that I didn't really like of theirs, but other than that, everything I ever see of them is pretty fantastic. So,
What was that movie?
Men.
Never saw it.
Yeah, I won't give anything away, but I was a little disappointed with that one.
Gotcha. I will never ever watch it. All right, so this last piece of news. This is pretty cool for me. Rod Serling, the creator and host of The Twilight Zone, has a documentary in the works. It's from Leonardo DiCaprio's production company. And the director, he's done documentaries before. It seems like mainly video games. He did a documentary on GameStop. He did one on console wars. So I wanted to ask you, like, what's your background with the Twilight Zone and Rod Serling, if you know anything about him?
Not much. I really didn't see much of the Twilight Zone until, oh geez, like 3 or 4 years ago. I spent a day with some buddies of mine at the time, kind of binge watching some episodes here and there. I've not seen the movie yet. My dad's actually been recommending me to watch the Twilight Zone movie. I know understand that there's some bad publicity with that, with some stuff that happened around it.
Yeah, people got killed by a helicopter crash.
Oh, is that the one that had that happen?
Yeah, I guess they're running away from a helicopter that was supposed to crash down, but for whatever reason, just went horribly wrong and fell like directly on the actors.
Jeez, man, that's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not much with the Twilight Zone. I remember the only other thing about the Twilight Zone was I really wanted to watch the new iteration that had Jordan Peele's involvement in it, because Jordan Peele's one of my favorite directors.
Yeah, how did that one go?
I don't know, I haven't seen it, so
Oh.
yeah, really not much involvement with the Twilight series or Twilight series, Twilight Zone
I've
series.
heard the
Boy,
Twilight
that
series is pretty good.
yeah.
Well, I loved the Twilight Zone as a kid, and I just think Rod Serling is such a badass. He was a bit of a maverick back in those days. I don't know why it sounds like I'm crying. It just gets so worked up over Rod Serling. No, he was a badass. He fought a lot in the Pacific during World War II. So if you watch a Twilight Zone episode and you see it's based on the Pacific Theater of that war, it's because a lot of that was his firsthand experiences over there. And when he came back from it, he started his career in writing for broadcast, doing like radio serials, and that's where the Twilight Zone started. But then he wanted to move over into television and really bring it to that visual medium. And a lot of people told him his stories are too weird or too out there, and he just said, screw all that. I'm gonna make this show and I'm gonna make it how I want to make it. And it's so cool to see a lot of people caught on to that. Very inspiring. And
Yeah.
then just what, yeah, and then just watching the Twilight Zone. As a kid, I remember always watching it at my grandma's house. We'd always have Twilight Zone on the Sci-Fi Channel. And now that I'm older, I still watch these episodes every now and then, and man, they still hold up. Just the shit that they cover all through this sci-fi horror veil, but it touches on social issues and deep personal things and society and the future, where we're going as people, and it's all conveyed through this 25-minute horror sci-fi story. And I love The Twilight Zone. Big inspiration on me from childhood.
I can see that. Yeah, the first episode I ever saw was something about aliens that had sent down some document as like negotiation with the humans, and then the humans figure out that it's a cookbook.
Oh, it's To Serve Man. It has that double meaning in the
Yeah.
title. It's perfect. But yeah, you look at an episode like The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, and it's how quickly people can turn on one another when they think there's a threat coming their way. And they used it through aliens, but it could be through anything. Hey, there's a storm coming, and this guy has a shelter, so let's all break into his house. Or why work together and we can all start fighting each other? It's a very real take on human nature. And I'll be excited to see this documentary. I always want to learn more about Rod Serling and his creations, and you don't really see too much of that on YouTube. Like, you can find video essays on tons of stuff, but Twilight Zone seems to get left out, and that kind of sucks.
I agree, man. Yeah, hopefully, I think Twilight Zone will last, legacy wise. Maybe it won't always be like at the forefront of, horror pop culture, but I think the fan base is pretty dedicated, so.
It's almost like Edgar Allan Poe. It's left a mark, and that legacy will always be there in some regard, I think.
Me and you were on the phone yesterday. We were kind of talking about horror movies that had come out so far in 2024 and what's left to release this year.
Yeah.
Because we've had a lot of big releases, especially in October as well. Obviously, Terrifier 3 came out. Smile 2 was a big release. And yeah, just a lot of horror movies this year. I don't know if these are in order on IMDb, but just some movies to sort of like highlight that we were reading through that were slated to come out, I think, for the rest of the year.
Okay.
There is something, let me see, let me find this list real quick. There's something called Night Bitch that I want to see.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, you're probably the one who told me about that.
Yeah, it's Amy Adams,
What's she been in?
Batman v Superman, Arrival, shit ton of stuff.
Arrival.
Says
Why
a
does that
woman
sound
pauses
familiar?
her career to. It's like the one where the aliens come down and they're trying to decipher if they're hostile or not.
I thought that was about aliens. Or
Yeah,
maybe I'm
it's.
thinking of the Hypocrisy album. It's called Arrival, and there's a bunch of gray aliens on it. That's always good.
Yeah, it says a woman pauses her career to be a stay-at-home mom, but soon her domesticity takes a surreal turn.
Yeah, that one does sound good.
Yeah,
I
there's
like surreal.
something called Werewolves.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for that, and I had no idea it was a werewolf movie until the title flashed up at the end, so I don't know about
It says releasing on
that
December 6, two scientists try to stop a mutation that turns people into werewolves after being touched by a supermoon the year before.
one. Ooh,
Starring Frank Grillo.
it's an interesting concept. I mean, we've been seeing, I don't know, I feel like I've been seeing more about supermoons and farmers' moons and blood moons the past couple years than ever before.
Yeah, I wanted to just look at some stuff coming out because horror is kind of slow in the theater right now. I don't feel like there's been like a lot of huge releases for horror this year in the theaters. Obviously there's been some like Smile 2, Terrifier 3, some Blumhouse stuff here and there, Long Legs, Quiet Place, Day One. But I wanna keep an eye out for some more under the radar stuff. So if anybody has any recommendations when they're listening to the show, definitely let us know.
Yeah, that's true. It seems like the horror movies that have come out at the box office have all been pretty big. You said Long Legs, Terrifier. We had the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, Trap.
Yeah, there's something coming out called Getaway that has Nick Frost in it.
That's a cool name.
And what, Nick Frost?
Yeah. It's like Chad Steele.
I think Nick Frost is the one half of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. They do all those funny like comedy movies like Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Yeah, the British guy or
Good eye,
guys.
mate.
Yeah. Still Australian, brother.
Shout out, James. I was a teenage film snob.
But this one, yeah, called Getaway. It says a family's vacation to a remote getaway takes an unexpected turn when they discover the island they're on is inhabited by a serial killer.
For some reason, I thought it was going to be something really off the wall. Like, I don't know, water worms.
Yeah. And then obviously, Nosferatu is slated to be released on Christmas for some reason.
Now, is that a straight remake of the 1920s one?
It is.
That's pretty cool. Because I know they did that one in the 90s or 80s. It was called, what, Vampire? And it was about Max Schreck actually being a vampire.
Shadow of the Vampire, I think, is what you're
Okay.
thinking of. Yeah.
I
And
want to
that was.
see that. That's a creative idea.
Me too. I think it's Willem Dafoe playing Max Schreck, and it's supposed to be like the theory of him actually being a vampire, Max Schreck in real life. We should do an episode on that, maybe in the build up to Nosferatu.
We should. I want to see that.
And then one other one I want to highlight real quick. It doesn't have a release date, but
Oh,
I'm
wait.
fascinated by what?
Am I sure Max Schreck played Nosferatu, or was that the bad guy in Batman Returns?
No. No, Max Schreck, yes, is Nosferatu, yes.
Okay, just making sure.
One other one I want to highlight. It doesn't have a release date for 2024 yet, but it is on the list. Something called Witchboard, and it says it's a reimagining of the 1986 horror classic. Have you ever heard of Witchboard?
I have not heard of Witchboard. No.
Okay, 1986. I have never heard of this before.
Got a plot summary?
Let me see real quick. Witchboard, 1986. Da-da-da-da-da.
Does it involve boards and or witches?
Let's see real quick. Oh my God, it has two sequels.
What was it with the movies back then all getting sequels?
Cult
Like
following
Silent Night,
since its
Deadly Night.
release and was subject to significant critical analysis by academic Carol J. Glover in her 1992 nonfiction book, Men, Women, and Chainsaws. I have never heard of this movie at all. It says the plot centers on a college student who becomes entranced into using her friend's Ouija board alone after it was accidentally left behind at her party, resulting in her becoming terrorized by a malevolent spirit.
Well, why are you using Ouija boards?
Says Tenney wrote the screenplay while a student at the University of Southern California, inspired after attending a party in which a friend brought a Ouija board for partygoers to use. For partygoers to use. The film focuses on the notion of progressive entrapment, the process by which a malevolent entity or demon takes control of a human being, a theme that was also touched on in The Exorcist.
I go back and forth. Possession freaks me out and demons freak me out, but if one took over me and I could just like be like superpowered by a demon, that sounds pretty awesome.
No, sir.
Yeah, but
No, sir. You are on your own for that.
if you could see like your bench go up 200 pounds, like holy shit, there's something to this.
Nah. Nope. Nope.
I
Nope.
mean, you might have a bunch of dead lambs in your closet, but how bad you want the gains?
Nah, not worth it. That is a hell fucking no to me.
Yeah, I talk a big game,
Or
but
from me.
that's why I would never go ghost hunting or any of that shit. I don't want to bring anything home with me. I
Well,
like
maybe we'll have to talk about Witchboard. Apparently, it's got a cult following. I've never heard of it, so
which board?
maybe we'll have to talk about it because it's getting a remake, so somebody's a fan of it.
And if you don't use the which board, we're gonna call you a bitch board.
I knew you were gonna say
It was
that.
so, I was a softball I had to hit.
You sound like a surfer dude, like Witchboard, more like Bitchboard.
You know, if that's an 80s movie, that line has to be in there.
What, bitch board?
Well, like surfer dude talk. Hang 10 guys. I am done with the impressions tonight. I am fucking bombing with this
What? We're done with this episode.
shit.
Let's bring it on home. Roy, you want to do your plugs for your novels?
Oh God, I'll try not to do impressions while I do them.
No, do it in your surfer voice.
Yeah, so on Instagram, I'm at author_honeybrookman. That's author_honeybrook. And it's weird because I'm talking like a surfer, but I'm also trying to enunciate so people could find me. I feel like this is just being annoying now. You can also find me on Amazon. All of my books are there. You can find a link on my Instagram page. All the R. Jacob Honeybrook different stories and books are on Amazon. I just said that. They're all 99 cents. And if you
Is
enjoy one, don't be shy. Please leave, feel free to leave a positive star rating and a positive review because that always helps. And that's very nice of you. Thank you. And I'd owe you two smooches too if you do all that. How you doing? Mwah.
There we go. Clearly this movie and
Terrible.
episode broke us.
Terrible. Oh my God.
You know what? We are just mentally exhausted from the movie watching experience and trying to make sense of this. This is some Lovecraftian shit where try to focus on things that are not meant to be understood, and our brains just turn to mush.
You looked at the things in Bird Box.
I
Now you're
looked at
done.
the trap, Ray.
Oh, dude, MGK's in Bird Box, so you know that's phenomenal.
Oh God, no. Bird Box is okay.
Was weird how that exploded the way it did.
I know. I remember watching that. I was like, eh.
Yeah, right. Like, I kept hearing all the shit about it. I'm like, well, I'm gonna watch Bird Box. And I was like, yeah, I kind of like The Mist better.
Yeah, it was too
I
close
definitely
to
like The Mist better.
a, yeah, it was too close to A Quiet Place too.
Oh, yeah, I still haven't seen those. I love the In Flames song, Quiet Place, though.
There we go. I
I'm
love
done.
Behind Space 99.
Da-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na.
Let's bring it on home. This has been the Midnight Terrors podcast, sort of. We're very tired, but it is the Midnight Terrors podcast nonetheless. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook under Midnight Terrors Podcast. You can shoot us an email at midnightterrorspodcast@gmail.com. You can check out our T Public store, which has some merch items on there. And you can join our Facebook group under Midnight Terrors Podcast and come talk horror with us and our friends and family. It's a good time. And then be on the lookout for more episodes. I think we're going to dive into some holiday horror with some friends of ours. So it should be a good time. But this is the Midnight Terrors Podcast. And you got something you want to say, Roy?
When you said it with some friends of ours, I don't know why I'm laughing so hard, but I'm just thinking we should try to get Santa Claus on here.
Maybe. Sky's the limit. If you want us to talk about a movie that we have not covered yet of your choosing, please send us an email. We will do it. Sky sent us a couple more emails that we can go through. But yeah, if you want to hear us talk about a particular movie, let us know because we'll do it. We want to hear different takes and different movie picks. And this has been a fun month of doing that. You know, because these are not movies that we would have picked right away. So,
Yeah, it's cool to hear from everyone because a lot of these movies I've never heard of or haven't seen or haven't seen in a while or wouldn't think to discuss, so keep them coming.
and we got some good gems out of it too. We both fell in love with Nightbreed and Death Becomes Her.
Yeah, Nightbreed was so cool. What a great idea. Star
Yeah.
Wars of horror? Oh my God. Give me more of that, Clive.
Yep, such a good movie. But yeah, thank you, Sky, and hopefully we'll get some more emails from other people. But this is the Midnight Terrors podcast. We love y'all. We'll see you again soon. Peace.